Welcome to The Aggressive Life. Early this fall, I got to fulfill a bucket list item. I appeared as a guest on a podcast that I've listened to for a long time. The podcast is called The Art of Manliness. Host Brett McKay started The Art of Manliness back in 2008. Thought it was just a shocking, brilliant idea to have a podcast, something devoted to help men. I was in from day one, and it's since grown into the largest independent men's interest magazine on the internet. He's got over 1,000 episodes. It's an extensive library, as is The Art of Manliness, explores what it means to be a man in our modern world, and just a bunch of kind of interesting things around manhood. Actually, truth be told, few of them are just pure down the pike manhood. It's just kind of good, cool stuff podcast, I think, what it is. So today, with permission from Brett, we're going to just replay my appearance on the show discussing the five marks for man, camping, the importance of friendship, and a lot of stuff. It was just a lot of fun being with him. It was also really fun hearing how he was reacting to and interacting with the content of the book that he had already read. He was obviously very intrigued and interested, and he seemed to have a great time. I know I did. So I'm really thankful he let us just rebroadcast it, because it was a rich conversation, I thought. So as we move into a new year, I think this is going to help you push into your new year with whatever changes you might need to make. Remember, it's not what you think, it's what you do. Let's get on to The Art of Manliness and The Aggressive Life, A Marriage Made in Heaven.
Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of The Art of Manliness podcast. We often think of the difference between a boy and a man as a matter of age. But Brian Tome says that there can be 15-year-old men and 45-year-old boys, and that the real difference maker in being grown up isn't a matter of the number of years you accumulate, but the qualities, behaviors, and mindset you possess. Brian is a pastor and the author of The Five Marks of a Man. Today on the show, Brian unpacks what he thinks are the marks of mature manhood. We talk about the need to have a vision and how life-giving hobbies can create that vision. Brian argues that manhood requires staking out a minority position, being part of a pack, and creating more than you consume. And we discuss the ways men can still be protectors in the 21st century. After the show's over, check out our show notes at aom.is/marks. All right, Brian Tome, welcome to the show.
Brett, fantastic to be here. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, glad to have you. So you have spent your career as a pastor who's particularly focused on working with men. What are the problems that you saw come up over and over again with the men that you interacted with that drove you to write this book, The Five Marks of a Man?
Yeah, well, it probably started when I got a lot of feedback from women saying, hey, could you do something to get the men in this church in line? And I at first took it as, well, you're just complaining because the guys who you want to ask you out, they're not asking you out. So I didn't pay much attention to it. But the more I heard them and the more I observed a lot of men's behavior, the more I realized there is a bunch of guys who haven't grown up yet. A bunch of guys who still aren't willing to make a commitment, like even a commitment to talk to a woman, even a commitment to date somebody. I tell fraternities, I've spoken to a number of fraternities around the country, and I tell them, I said, guys, if you will talk to a woman, you can have any woman here you want. Because young men are afraid to talk to women. They're okay to text them, okay to be in a group context, but just not comfortable. And I saw again and again and again how young men were struggling. And then I saw older men, and I use the men loosely. The premise of the book, Brett, is there's such a thing as a 15-year-old man, and there's such a thing as a 45-year-old boy. It doesn't matter how old you are. It's a matter of these marks that I started to discovering. And I saw these guys, a couple of them were my friends, who I just thought, gosh, dude, you're 45. You still have a hard time getting up early and going to work and keeping the same job. You still
have a hard time keeping a commitment to a woman after all this time? You still act like the way I acted when I was 15. It just seemed odd to me. And so that was all part of the stew that I was swimming in at that point.
Yeah, these 45-year-old boys, in the words of my son, 13-year-old son, Gus, he would say, they don't mean business. They don't even know their business.
I like that. Yeah, well, that's one of the marks that I uncovered. And when I say these marks, I would just have the listeners say, if you picture a man who you respect, your father, a father figure, even a man from history, Abraham Lincoln, a Winston Churchill, I think you'll find that these five things come up again and again and again and again and again. And one of them, you just mentioned with your son's amazing quotes. I'm going to have to write that down. If I do a revision of the book, Brett, I'm going to quote your son. And what he's basically saying there is these guys don't have a vision for their life. A man has a vision. A boy lives day to day. And until there's something out in the distance that you don't have, that you want, and is going to take two things, time and difficulty. That's what a vision is. There's time and difficulty before you get there. And boys want it all right now. They don't want to work out and get their physical goals. They don't want to work their way up the food chain in the business world. They think immediately everybody should hear their ideas because they're so amazing. No, when you have a vision, there's something out there that's giving you reason for why you're doing what you're doing today, whatever that vision is. And they change over time, right? It's just something out there. It could be getting college education, getting married, being the first person in my family to actually stay married, starting a business, doing a triathlon. Whatever it is, a boy will never take off a goal like that because he just wants to have a good day.
I've noticed this too in a lot of grown men is a lot of them who are floundering, they seem listless. They lack a vision that they're shooting for. Why do you think there's so many men lacking that bigger vision for their lives and for their families?
I think there's a confluence of a lot of things that have come together. The men today, and by men, I'm talking about anybody in their, 20s, 30s, 40s, everyone thinks that the earliest generation is the weakest generation. That's been part of American history. Every German generation from John Adams back all thinks, oh, these new Americans, they're just going to be weak. They're horrible. But I do think if we look back at the things that we've done to bless our kids, the things we've done to set our kids up for success, I think we've made them more short-term focused. I think as we've talked about things like follow your passion. You get up every day and you go to work and you find that you're really good at something. And then that becomes your passion because you're finding you're having results with that. But follow my passion. What's that supposed to mean? Every 18-year-old is supposed to be a social media influencer. That's never been an option, Brett, for any male in history. So we've got all these things that are first offs that we're dealing with right now in America, things that have never happened in anthropological history. Even the idea of adolescence, that term wasn't known until about 1900. It was coined like 1900. Oh, adolescence. There's this weird thing that's happening with kids as they come into puberty. Well, that went from being when you were 13 to when you're 13 to 18. Now what's 13 to 35? People feel like they still can't make commitments or still trying to find themselves. Hey, trying to find yourself. It's okay that we're all on a journey of self-discovery. But we have to say, at this point, I don't know enough about myself to move. I've got some outages and I've got to look at those instead of just an idea for what I might do in the future.
Yeah, I love that idea of not following your passion. Instead, this is from Cal Newport from that book he wrote, So Good They Can't Ignore You. Mm. And he talks about instead of following your passion, find what you're really good at and then just throw yourself into that. And then you'll develop a passion because you're displaying mastery and you're actually having an effect on the world. And he says, the problem with passion, following your passion, is passion's fleeting. You can be excited about being a social media influencer. You can be excited about, lifting weights or being a coach. That's good. It could change from day to day. But if you find that one thing you're really good at, you discover what life has called you to and try to do that with all your might, then you'll develop that passion. As you do that.
Yeah, and you discover it not by taking an online survey or seeing somebody else's life that has a lot of expensive things. You discover it by By working, by putting one foot in front of the other. That's actually the second mark that I found in my research, is that men work and boys play. Men wake up, they feel like they have a job to do, they want to add value, and a boy isn't so much concerned or interested in that. But when you have a work ethic, when you just start hitting the same nail, something happens. And I think, Brett, that's one of the ways that our younger generation of men are at a disadvantage. You and I could probably compare all the crappy jobs we had from, you know, age 13 on. You know, we could probably one-up each other. I could tell you about when I delivered papers, satchels over both shoulders, cutting into my neck when I had the big Sunday edition and having to figure out how to do it in the snow. We all have our horror story. I could tell you about flipping hamburgers at Hardee's over an open flame, getting third-degree burns on my inner thighs when cleaning out the fryers. I could tell you about, you know, when I was a grunt worker. All of us who are older have those sort of stories of things that we're just crappy to do. And those jobs, many of them are just gone. There's no paper boys anymore. The demands on school also can tend to be so high that people don't even have time for jobs. Like, how many kids do you know actually have a minimum wage job? I think our parents, and we're trying to bless our kids by maybe letting them have it easier than we did, but in the process, we're short-circuiting a way for them to develop work ethic, which will help them discover what their passion is because they find that they're good at it.
Okay, so finding your vision or developing a vision isn't about, it sounds like you have to just start doing stuff in the world, and as you do those things, you'll discover what that vision is, but it takes action.
Yes. You've got to test things out. You've got to try things out. And again, young males in the history of all of civilization, that's what they did. They had a path that they had to get on and follow that path. You know, get myself a teepee, go out and hunt, take care of these things, sleep outside. These are all things that every man in every corner of the globe throughout history have done until the last 100 years or so. And so I think that there's been things that naturally were in place to grow a young male into a man. And some of those things we've evolved out of, and it's actually to our destruction.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. So I think one of the reasons that also may be contributing to a lot of men these days, maybe in their 30s, 40s, who don't feel like they have like a vision for their life, is that before, you know, like say 100 years ago, this is kind of related to what you were saying about the rites of passage. Yes. In cultures, you had a vision given to you in your culture. Like, this is what you need to do. And so you did it, right? Yeah. And now we live in an age where this is a blessing. You get to decide what you're going to do. But that blessing, yes, can also be a curse, because it's like, oh man, there's so many things I could do, so many things I could have as a vision for my life, that it can become so overwhelming that you just don't do anything.
Yeah, I interact with people in corporate America who are making huge amounts of money, massive, massive amounts of money. And it's very common for them to think, yeah, but what would have happened if I'd been a stockbroker? You know, what would have happened if I started my own business? You know, great point, Brett. We didn't have these options way back when. We just put our head down and went after it. And I think that we're spending too much time navel-gazing as men. Put your hand at the plow, as the Bible says. Here goes first Bible quote, because I am a pastor by day. You know, put your hand at the plow and don't look back. When you're plowing a field, you want to fix your eyes on a tree on the other side of the field and let your horse pull you towards it so your rows are nice and straight. Most of us don't have the attention span to fix our eyes on a tree on the other side of a field. We're just looking left and right, wondering, does somebody else have a better ox than we do? Is somebody else doing it better than I am? Looking behind ourselves, second guessing my past. No, man, just look forward on what you think is best and go.
Okay, so I think the takeaway there, if you're a young man and you want to develop that vision for your life, try different, like do different stuff, try different things, because that's how you're going to find it. What advice do you have for a guy who's in his 30s and 40s? You know, he's got a career, maybe he's got a mortgage he's got to pay, and he doesn't feel like he has the ability to go do other things, try different things, because it might just mess everything up, you know, make it so he can't pay the bills. Any advice for those guys who feel listless because they don't have something bigger they're shooting for?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things that they could do. One is to just look under their nose, see what's around them, and recognize that there's long-term lasting impact they can have in the relationships around them. You know, as we've put off having a family, I know that you did a bit a while ago when you said one of the marks of man was procreation, as we take a look at you know, history. I really like that a lot. Maybe there's six marks of a man, but there is this thing of I've created somebody who's going to outlast me. You know, your business isn't going to outlast you, but you create a person. It does. That's a great vision. If you have kids, like that's an unbelievable vision that is going to outlast you, and you can replicate yourself in those guys and women in huge ways. I think the second thing that you're probably touching on here, Brett, which is another passion area of mine, is many men feel that way, but the answer isn't finding a new vision or a new purpose. The answer is you need a life-giving hobby. You need some hobby that captures your imagination, something that you can improve in, because I think it's important for us to men to feel like we're on some sort of improvement plan. You know, I know for you, at least for a while ago, your hobby seemed to be cross-training and powerlifting and stuff, and that's a good hobby for me. I've got elk hunting is one for me. I don't know much about it. I'm learning. I've got to get in shape. I'm dreaming about it. I got to plan trips, all that stuff. I've got another hobby of restoring old cars. Got to learn things about that. Ask other men questions about how to rebuild a T150 transmission. And it takes creative thought, and it's a vision. It's something that's fun to do. And I just meet a lot of guys who aren't doing anything fun, and they think the answer is, I need some huge career shift. Maybe I'm okay with if you do a career shift, but first, is there anything you do that brings you life that you're not paid for? Is there anything you sink a lot of money in simply because you like it? That's a real outage for us.
Okay, so don't just your vision doesn't have to be just constrained to your career.
Correct.
You can look beyond that. Yeah, I like. Yes. I think that's a good insight. So sometimes a hobby itself can form that vision or purpose for your life. And something I've noticed too in my own life is hobbies can inspire a different vision for your career too.
Yeah, well, I was on one of my hobbies is adventure motorcycling riding, and I never thought that that would do anything other than just be fun to camp with other guys. And we were on a campfire one day, and I wasn't looking for a new vision. I wasn't looking for anything different to do. And one of the guys around the campfire opened up about something really vulnerable in his life. It was one of those moments, like when someone goes there, everyone around the fire says, wow, I don't hear that very often. And I could probably say something like that right now if I had the courage. And there was this really great bonding moment. And the next morning before we were heading out, we were on the same campfire. And I said, guys, every time we come do this, people open up, we get vulnerable, we go back as better men. And I don't think it's the fact that we're on motorcycles. I don't think it's the fact that, you know, we're staying away from our home for a couple nights. I think we're tapping into this thing of camping and being around a campfire. Like every man from all history has sat around a fire and shared their heart or encouraged one another or had drinking stuff or gotten ready before a big battle. I said, what could we do to make something like this accessible to more men? Who are never going to get in a motorcycle. Who cares if you ride a motorcycle or not? And that became this thing that has become a vision for my life that I never, ever, 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 ever would have thought of. It's called Man Camp. And it just came out of nowhere. And I would have never stood around, hey, we have 3,000 guys, 7 different countries, 40 different states coming together actually tomorrow. And it's going to be really crazy. And I could have never, ever, 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 ever thought, well, how could I, what could I do that would gather 3,000 people from around the world? I would never, but because I was just trying to take a break, I was trying to have a hobby, I was trying to detach, then an idea came to me and I realized, oh, I'm actually kind of set up for this. That's how these big visions come, these quote unquote big visions. When you're just being faithful with what you feel you need to do, and then something comes to you, and you decide to step out and put one foot in front of the other.
Going back to that idea of just, you know, putting your hand to the plow and just looking at the tree and just keeping going. I know a lot of guys, once they've decided, like, this is my vision, this is what I'm going to work on, it can be really tempting to be like, well, I'm just getting tired of this. I want to do something else. I'm going to jump ship and do something else. Any advice on playing the long game? Because as you said, boys live for today, men play the long game. So any advice on getting better at playing the long game?
I think if you're going to make a shift, it needs to be because you've been doing the same job for a long time and you've really tried to innovate in that job, but you're repeatedly seeing really bad, negligible results. If that's your situation, you've been faithful, you've been hitting the same nail over and over again, then you might want to look at a change. But I think for most of us, the problem is that we don't hit the same nail. You could line up a railroad tie and you could put 10 nails in it, and you could take your hammer and just start hitting each of those nails as you feel hitting them. But the only one that's going to go down is the one you stay on, and you keep hitting the same nail to sink it. There's a lack of tenacity that's bred into us by our culture. We don't have to be tenacious. There's so many safety nets. There's so many options. There's so much distraction, right? We're losing that focus. So when a man can learn to focus on a thing, he's almost always going to find that he's going to have success, because very few men are able to focus.
One bit of useful advice I got from my dad. So my dad was a federal game warden. He did that for 30 years. And I remember when I was like 18 or 19. At this point, he was probably 25 years in the job. And I asked my dad, how do you do, like every day is the same day for you, and you've been doing this for 25 years. Like, what do you do? And his advice was, he says, I just focus on each day and try to make the best I can out of that one day. And then everything else just kind of takes care of itself. I thought that was pretty good advice.
That is a good one.
Okay. So the second mark you talk about in the book is men take a minority position. How do boys do the opposite of this?
Yeah. Well, boys are always looking to be in the majority. In Cincinnati, we don't have a pigeon problem, because somehow, and it's debatable how this happened, was this introduced or did they just come here? There were peregrine falcons that came to our city. There was a couple families. I actually went to one hotel a number of years ago, and there was the falcon nest sitting right outside. It was really crazy. And what happens is these peregrine falcons, they just waste all the pigeons. That's how they eat. They come down and just crush them and destroy them. And that's what it's like with boys and men. Boys are like pigeons. They squawk around. They poop all over the place. They make a lot of noise. They don't clean up after themselves. They run in big, big, big packs. And then men are, there's few of us, Brett. There's few of us who have principles that we'll die for. There's few of us who will play the long game. There's few of us who will endure hardship and feel like it's a mark of manhood to just endure it and suck it up. Because sometimes you have to do that as a man. And there's few of us. You take a minority position. Your beliefs as a man, you're going to find they're in the minority relative to the rest of the culture. I'm not trying to be in the minority. A man doesn't intentionally love to be in the minority. He just recognizes whatever it is, he's got a guiding star. He's got a north point on his life that's more important to him than the approval of the masses, which is what the boys need.
Yeah, I can see this happening. Let's say a man who's got a career in a particular profession, and there's a lot of pressure to spend a lot of time at work, right? That's what you do. But this particular man says, no, family's more important. So I'm going to spend more time with my family and less time at work. And they might get derided for that. They might have opportunities to advance in their career, be limited because of that position, but they got to be okay with that.
Right, right. You can't have it all. You can't work out five times a week, be well-read, be up to speed on the latest TV shows, binge those, have a career that's thriving and going someplace, have a wife who loves you, have kids that respect you. You can't have all those things. You got to be happy having a couple of those things to a really, really high degree. And then other ones you just play and dabble in from time to time. It's choices you have to make. And boys just don't want to make choices.
All right, so having a vision will sometimes require you to take a minority position, and that can mean being in the minority in terms of the smaller number of people who recognize that everything in life has trade-offs, so you got to make choices. But it can mean also bigger things, big professional, moral, ethical decisions. Any advice on strengthening the nonconformity muscle that will allow you to go against the tide with your vision and principles? Because I mean, a lot of men, as soon as they meet with some resistance, they're tempted to just give up because it's easier to go with the flow.
Right. Well, what I do personally is I look at the historical figures that inspire me, and it seems like all of them were a voice in the wilderness. You know, Winston Churchill saying, hey, we have got to take the Nazis serious here. This is not good. He was taking a minority position until finally they realized, okay, we have to go to war. I was over in Germany just last week touring some of the sites of chaos and destruction from the Nazis. And at all these sites, there's a person that's memorialized because they didn't go with the majority. One of the sites I went to was a concentration camp outside of Weimar. It's called Buchenwald. And there was a pastor there who got thrown in because he refused to give Nazi propaganda when he was doing a funeral. He got thrown in there and then refused to take his hat off in respect to Hitler on Hitler's birthday. So they threw him in solitary confinement, which is right where the buses came in, unloading all these inmates. And the guy started preaching out of the window. And so they took him away and they killed him. And then they put boxes over all the windows so that nobody could do that in the future. And you could see all that stuff there. So when I see these things, Brett, of people who stand for what is right, who go a different path, I'm always inspired. And I just kind of log it away in my mind and say, okay, Brian, when people don't understand you, when they think you're doing the wrong thing, even if you think it's the right thing, don't expect everyone to applaud. That is not the lesson of history.
All right. So look for historical examples. That can be a great way to strengthen, to steel yourself up.
Yes.
I like that.
I'll give another one.
Yeah.
Another one would be look in the past to when you took little mini stands. You know, what were those stands that you took? It's the many things that we do that prepare us for the future. And so with the minority position, we think back to, I remember when I was in college and it was a psychology class. I think about this frequently, actually. I use it to psych me up. And I remember they were talking about the id and how some people believe in God. And this wasn't some Christian Bible school. It was a secular university. And my professor's name was Dr. Heckel. I kid you not. That was his name, Dr. Heckel. And he said, well, for instance, does anybody in here happen to believe in God? And there was about 80 people in this classroom. And I sat there. I looked around. I started to have a cold sweat break down in my face. And like no one, and I knew people there did. This is 1983, you know? No one was. It felt like it was 3 hours. And I remember raising my hand. And then he didn't belittle me. He just asked me a question or so, and that was it. And when I was done with that, I thought, wow, that was a big deal. I think it's the first time I stood up and was the only one in a room and raised my hand. That formed me for things on down the line that were later on. And so I think about those things and I tell myself, you've done this before, Brian. This is just the most recent one, but this is in your history. You can do this.
All right. Take courage from the small things. I like that. A third mark you talk about is men are team players. And you argue that it's boyish to want to be a lone wolf. Why is that?
Yeah. I've heard guys say this. I'm a lone wolf. And I'll say to guys, I'll say, you mean you're weak and you're going to die sooner than you need to? And they always look at me like, what are you talking about? And I say, well, anybody who knows wolves knows that when you're a lone wolf, you're weak and you die sooner because wolves can only live when they're in a pack because that's how they can pull down an elk. We've even dramatized, mythologized this beautiful characteristic of not needing anybody or not being able to play with other people well. And it's coming to our detriment. I think this is why men are, you know, four times more likely to die of suicide, and all of our other statistics are horrible because we are not making relationships, which is another way of saying team. We're not entering into team environments with people, either guys or women.
Yeah, there's that quote from Rudyard Kipling, "For the strength of the pack is the wolf, and the strength of the wolf is the pack."
Oh, that's good. Brett, why didn't I talk to you before I wrote this book? I should have that in my book. What am I doing?
No, it's a good one. And because it goes to this idea, going back to ecology, when they observe wolves, the lone wolves are usually the ones that got kicked out of the pack because they were a runt, or they were just mean. They just weren't cooperating. They weren't helping the pack out. And so they oftentimes they're like the pack reject. And like, you don't want to be there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
So I know a lot of men these days, we've talked about this on the podcast, a lot of men these days feel like they don't have a pack. They don't have a group of friends that can strengthen them. Any advice to those men who, particularly in their 30s and 40s, that's when it gets really hard. When you're in your 20s, you're still in college, it's easy to make friends. Any advice for men in their 30s, 40s, 50s who are looking for a solid group of friends that can help them become a better man?
Absolutely. It's not an easy path, but I 100% have the answer. The answer is life-giving hobbies. That's the answer. Women, there was an old book decades ago, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. Do you remember that book, Brett?
Oh, of course. Yeah, it was huge, yeah. All over the place.
Yeah, it was massive. And he said, yeah, women go to lunch, men go to their cave. Women tend to be more able to just go to a meal and look at somebody and talk or have a book study. tend to be able to do that better than men. I'm not saying those things aren't manly. I'm just saying that tends to make more sense or come more naturally to a woman. Men, on the other hand, we get friends when we do things together. It's not because we're in college that we had friends. It's not because we're in high school that we had friends. There's no magic friend dust in high school and college campuses. It's that we were doing things with people. We were on athletic teams. We were in intramural things. We were on debate teams. We were doing things that caused us to be around people, and then friendships popped up. Then what happens is we age. We're so immersed with our career or with our streaming or with whatever it is that we're not doing things with other men. And when you're not doing things with other men, you're not going to be able to find another friend. But if you take up a hobby of, just name it, I just named a couple of mine. You take up a hobby of restoring a 1978 Jeep CJ7, there's things that you don't know and YouTube won't help you with that a friend of mine has a new friend by the name of Pete. He'll come over and like, hey, you got to do that. Oh, I didn't know that. And all of a sudden we're friends. You take up whatever it is, you're going to find people to do that with you. And that's where the friendship starts. I had a group of closest friends where we were riding motorcycles together. A couple of them dropped out. So we said, we can't let these friendships die. So we started hunting together, lower impact. And so we have text threads of where are we going to go this year? What kind of gear are you getting? Here's the new gear I'm getting. And it's banter and it's beer planning meetings and all that stuff because it's a hobby. We are starved as men as hobby. And I want to tell you, brothers, you're not a bad person if you don't have hobby. You're not a bad person. This isn't a moral thing. It's just, it's okay to spend money on yourself and time on yourself. It'll make for a healthier you and a healthier family.
All right. So find a hobby. So it could be CrossFit. It could be jujitsu. I know a guy who joined a bagpipe band and he does that. And he does they do parades and he's made a lot of great friends doing that.
That's awesome. Yeah. We're not talking about doing stereotypical manly things. I just shared some stereotypical manly
bagpipes things. Bagpipes are pretty manly.
Bagpipes are very, very manly, but I'm even saying, you want to go to a poetry writing class and learn how to write poetry and there's other men there and you're like bouncing haikus off each other or something? Great. This isn't a matter of doing classic masculine stuff. It's just doing something that fills you up, that gets you around other men where, who knows, a friendship just might happen.
Yeah. I mean, like back in the day, and people still do this today, but I think it happened more a couple decades ago. Like men would get together just to play cards, play poker, play bridge. And I mean, look, you might not, and what's the thing about doing this stuff together, like doing stuff with other men? You might not have these deep, vulnerable conversations, but doing the stuff allows that to happen if it does happen.
Right.
Right.
Well, yeah, you named a couple of them, right? Cards, you're right. I remember my dad he wasn't a poker player, but he played bridge club. He'd go with bridge club. So cards, that's gone for most people. Elks club, that's gone. Lions club, that's gone. Softball teams, they're pretty much gone. You go by a softball field 30 years ago, every night you'd see guys out there playing who probably shouldn't have been playing, but they're grown over. Guys aren't there anymore. Bowling leagues, they're pretty much gone. All this connective tissue we had in our culture, Brett, that would enable us to connect with one another. Because again, men connect with other people when they're doing something. So all this stuff that we would do and meet men, that connective tissue is gone. And it's really unhealthy. So a man's going to have to really figure out how to create that connective tissue for himself. But it is job number one for your mental health and for your future.
And I think the advice there for men who want to start growing that connective tissue, I think something that helps is just manage expectations. Like it might take a while and it could be a lot harder than you think, because I've noticed this when you try to get other men together, like they're busy. They're not used to doing stuff with other people. They're used to prioritizing other things. So the idea of prioritizing friendship or doing stuff, it's hard for them. So they might flake out or I can't make it. But you just got to keep being consistent with it. And you got to play the long game with this, going back to that other mark of manhood.
Brother, you're right. This goes right back to the vision. It's going to be time and difficulty. And there's going to be misses. And actually what you might find too is the initial guys who want to be your friend are the guys that nobody else wants as a friend. That's why they're available.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's some people out there that are just not helpful, and it may take you a while to break into a friend group that will have you, or to find another person like yourself who has all the right stuff Jess is dealing with the same thing, but you've got to keep trying. This is a vision you need. The mental health statistics are very, very clear on this. It's going to take time. It's going to take effort. And once you find it, it is worthy. It is gold.
In this section about men or team players, you talk about how boys reject authority and men respect authority. And you talk about respecting the authority of like teachers in law enforcement. But something that I thought was interesting is that you said you need to respect the authority of your friends. What does that mean and what does that look like?
First of all, it's a complete turn on that you've actually read my book. I can't tell you how many podcasts I've done where someone just looks at the thing, they sit down. So, dude, I'm truly honored. That's awesome. Yeah. Let's go to one of the greatest teams that a man could ever be on, and that is a marriage. It's the ultimate team. You're with a person who compliments you. That's what a team is. You're in relationship with people who have skills and abilities you don't. And so when you're married, you're with somebody who has body parts that you don't, skills and abilities that you don't, whatever your skills, abilities are and theirs. Now, when you think about the number of people who've been divorced, which that statistic is incredibly high, and then if you think about the number of people after divorce who say, their friend says, I saw that one coming, that's heartbreaking. So I encourage young men to get references on people they're going to date, or while they're dating them, ask around. Do you know this woman? You know this girl? What's your history been like? What's she been like? You're not looking to see some perfect woman, but you're looking to see if this woman is somebody who can't pay attention and always goes from one guy to another. You need to know that. If this is a woman who doesn't serve, she never serves, she's always about herself, that's a sign. We do references when we hire somebody for our business. Why don't we do references when we go on a date with somebody? Our divorce rate will be lot lower.
Okay, so if you're a friend, part of being a friend is letting your friends know, like, well, maybe you're not making a great decision here. And that's another thing you talk about in the book, is that men want to make other men better. Boys just want to make sure everyone feels comfortable.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a scripture verse that talks about the wounds of a friend bring healing. You know, it's when my friends see me doing something that I get healed. I've taken significant amount of time off every summer. And I thought a couple years ago, Brett, I thought, you know what? I've been doing this for a while. Maybe I won't do that this summer. I know you're really in love with Vermont and doing all that. I've got my different places where I go to. And I had a friend of mine say to me, he said, man, you sound like someone who has bipolar, who's feeling good and thinks they can now go off their meds. He said, this rhythm has worked for you. You're doing well. Don't change it. And I didn't listen, and I changed it, and I paid a massive, massive price. I just wasn't fresh. I started getting into destructive behaviors. I couldn't weather criticism the same way because I didn't have just the clarity of detoxing and detaching. I was less energetic, less resilient in the face of criticism. It just led me down a dark hole, and I didn't listen to my friend. And my friend was trying to tell me something that I didn't realize. That's why you need friends. You need friends not just to laugh with somebody and have some beers with them. You need friends that give you golden wisdom and insight that no book or no counselor is going to give you, because they get you.
Okay, so if your friend gives you hard advice, they've taken the minority position, they're giving you hard advice, don't reject it outright. Maybe listen to it.
Right. I've got a friend who I'm giving him hard advice and he's just not listening. So he just keeps... It's a divorce. He's gone through divorce, and he's not detaching from his toxic previous wife, even though it's over. The paper signed, everything. He just keeps allowing himself to be manipulated and controlled. It's the weirdest thing. And I've hammered him on it. You start nice and soft, and then you take on this demeanor of a football coach who's trying to fire up somebody in the locker room because you see their emotional welfare crumbling before them. And I'm making a little progress, but he will tell you that if it wasn't me giving him some wounds from time to time, he'd be way, way worse off. We all need it. None of us are perfect. And that's why we need our pack to build into us and round us out a bit.
Okay, another mark you talk about, we kind of mentioned it earlier, is that men work. How does a boy's approach to work differ from a man's approach to work?
Well, a boy just doesn't want to do it. A boy just wants to be supported. A boy wants to only work at something that is fun to do. A boy wants to work just long enough at minimum. Brett, I remember my first real deal job. I was 22 years old. A company sends in this financial guy to help me figure out what I'm going to do with retirement savings. And he says, okay, what age you want to retire? And I said, I just mouthed as a boy, because I was a boy at 21. I mouthed what I heard everybody else said. I said, oh, I want to retire like 55. Said, oh, okay, 55. So he put some pencil to paper and figured out, well, you have to save this much every month to retire at that age. And I said, okay, maybe I'm not retiring at 55, because that was too difficult. I'm turning 59 in a week. I can't believe that I actually thought at 55 is what I wanted to be done. I feel, Brett, like I'm just starting to figure out life right now. I can't believe that I fell hood to boydom as a fantasy to be retired at 59. Why? To do what? So I could retire to Florida and play golf and watch Price is Right while the mosquitoes suck the blood out of my geriatric skin? I mean, why would I do that? Because it was boyish thinking. A man, he's here to work. I'm sorry to go Bible on you, but I am a pastor, so it's the most foundational story in the Bible. It's Adam and Eve. Most people know about it. Adam and Eve are put on the earth. Whether you think it's literal or figurative, that's your prerogative. And what do? Before anything happens in the world, they work. Before anything happens wrong, before they bite of the forbidden fruit, they're working. They're working the ground. They're naming the animals. That tells us that work isn't something that is evil. It's something that is good. And a man has to be working. And we see the statistics on this. When a man stops working, the dementia and the physical fitness and the death comes way, 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 way sooner. We talk about these guys who are old and like still going on, like Clint Eastwood. I mean, nobody would have seen this guy who created spaghetti westerns, you know, decades ago that I used to watch as a kid. No one would have thought that guy would be a prolific director, winning Academy Awards in his 80s. His best work is in his 80s. And how is that guy still going at 95? You know how? You know why? Because he's working. That's why. Because he's fresh as a result of it. A boy doesn't think about this, but a man wants to be fresh. Now, I'm not saying, Brett, that you need to be in corporate America and you need to be earning a paycheck until the day you die. There's realities. You're going to be pushed out. You're not going to be as physically capable to fill a job. But that's not what I'm talking about with work. When I'm talking about work, I'm talking about adding value, making the people around you better, having a reason to get up in the morning. And a man should never, never have some goal of taking it easy and not working. It's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I like that. Work's not just making money. Work is also doing service or being a mentor or taking up some, I don't know, working for a nonprofit when you retire. That's also work.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
And I like that, you know, adding value and having that outward mindset can really keep you going for the long term. But also, I think a lot of men, some men struggle with, they embrace work too much. They become workaholics. So how do you balance work with other areas of your life, like family or those life-giving hobbies you were talking about?
Well, I think we have balance wrong. I think most people, when they think of balance, they think of it as a scale where you have equal weights on either side. And I think the best metaphor for balance is a golf swing. You know, to hit the ball far as possible, you have to load up different sides of your body. Load up your right side on your backswing, load up your left side on the follow through. And at no point are you balanced. If you're balanced, then you're not going to swing. The process of swinging is by its nature unbalanced. That's, I think, the kind of balance we need. Recognizing there's certain seasons of our life where I'm going to be really weighted up in one specific area. And there comes the problem, because it takes wisdom to learn when you're too weighted up on work. It takes wisdom to learn when you're too weighted up on pleasure. But you need to be able to have both those things. Younger guys, I give young guys the same advice. My son has more hobbies, more outlets, more things than I ever had at his age. Shoot, probably more than now. It's just the younger generation, they're in a different thing. And what I've spoke with him about, and he's doing really, really well with this, but I tell this to younger guys all the time, is I said, hey, you're 20s. is a time for you to be unbalanced. Because right now, what you want is to become amazing at whatever your job is, or find by the time you're 28 what your job is, cycle through a few. This is when you want to be weighted up on that, loaded up on that, because that's going to create freedom for you and financial margin and options in the future. But if you right now just want to work 40 hours a week and have all your hobbies, you're not going to have the life as a 50-year-old the way you can, which is why one mentor of mine, Bob Beal, who wrote a book on decades, he says the most successful, effective, productive decade of a man's life is his 60s. And his second most productive is his 70s. And the reason being, because we've learned, we have networks, we've got knowledge we didn't have before. We can connect things together. And that happens because over the long span of your life, you've been doing the right thing. So for the balance, I think you've got to say where I am right now, what is the right amount of work life right now? You always have to take care of yourself in terms of having adequate friendship time and play time and all that stuff. But those things are going to change over the years.
You also have this chapter. I love the line, boys consume, men produce. So how can shifting from a consumer mindset to a producer mindset help a guy step into the role of a man?
Well, it's pretty funny. You know, we're known as Americans. We're not even known as American citizens. We're known as American consumers. You hear that all the time. How do you keep the economy rolling? Consume. You know, George Bush, way back at 9/11, he said, let's keep the economy rolling, keep spending. And we don't spend that much time talking about producing. We're just looking at the consumer price index. We're consumers. And if you can figure out how to produce something that somebody else doesn't have, you're going to do just fine. It could be anything. Producing widgets, producing kids, producing wisdom for other people. But how can I add value and make things better because of my role and spot on the earth? That's how we make a life. We produce.
Yeah. Boys, yeah, consuming is just about taking from the pot. Right. Producing is about adding value to the pot.
Yeah, was it Adam Mann who said it's always take, take, take. Na, 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 na. That's what the boy says. Take, take, take. That's, I said that one time to my son. He was, you know, a teenager. You know, I just, hey man, you're just taking it. I'm talking about my son is an amazing man. Very, 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 very proud of him. Yeah, he's crushing life. He's doing amazing. But there was a lot of things. There were very, very hard conversations. And one of them was, you take, take, take. You take my tools. You take my car. You're always pushing. You're always wanting more. And that doesn't bode well for our relationship or for your future. You've got to be known as a guy who gives more than he takes. You got to be known for a guy who creates more than he consumes. That's a message for all of us to be reminded of.
All right. So the fifth and final mark is men are protectors. What does being a protector look like in the 21st century?
Yeah, that's a tough wrinkle. It was very obvious in the past the way you're a protector of your tribe. We've needed men to have muscles. And that's why today there's even conversations in Ivy League classrooms and have been on the cover of Time magazine over the last decade or so. Like, do we even need men anymore? Like, I can't believe we said, do we even need men? And what they're saying is we've evolved as a society and a civilization. We have machines that are doing work for us, and we're not raiding the neighboring tribe where we need men and their muscle mass. So, you know, what are men needed for? We're needed to still protect. Now, sometimes that does mean you're going to have to put your body in front of a situation. This was years ago. I found out about a guy at the gym where my wife was working out, and he was hitting on her. I ran across a email or something like that, and he was a trainer at the gym, and I had to walk in there and call him out in the middle of the day, called him out in the parking lot. He was training a client. I said, I need to see you in the parking lot right now. And he came out, and fortunately, I caught him off guard, freaked him out. And I just told him, hey, man, you need to stay away from my wife. And he started jabbering around. I said, no, look, I looked at him and said, can you stay away from my wife? It ends now. And he said, okay. And that was it. That was a sense of protecting there. I have a friend who's a quadriplegic. He's not going to be able to protect. And I said to him, Ryan, because of your ordeal in your spiritual depth, you can protect people by giving them wisdom that they're not going to get anywhere else. That's a way to protect. That's a form of protection.
No, I think that's a good, I like that. And also I've noticed as I've gotten older, one of the protecting roles that I play as a man, like it's any group I belong to, I'm always looking to see if there's any individuals who either intentionally or unintentionally are causing problems. And I think the boy thing would be like, well, I just won't say anything. I won't do anything about it. As an adult, especially in a leader position, I'm like, I got to take care of this. I got to make sure that the group is okay and that individuals feel safe and they're not being annoyed. And so it requires having uncomfortable conversations with individuals saying, hey, you're doing stuff that's making this person feel really, really uncomfortable, or you're just messing up the dynamic of the group. And I'm here to make sure that that doesn't happen. Like, we want everyone to have a good time.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great example, Brett. Yeah. Run to the problem. A man runs the problem. He doesn't assume somebody else is going to do it. That's passivity. If you look at these five marks, Brett, and you said, is there any through line through all of them? I would say the through line is passivity versus being aggressive. And by aggressive, I'm not talking about powering up and dominating somebody. I'm just saying you make the move. You're pushing. Men do that. We make the move. They want to make it right. Where boys are passive. So yeah, boy would not do what you're doing. The boy would not invite a hard conversation. He would just wait for somebody else to do it, or he would just stop attending the group, or, and he would just judge and complain about the person. That's because boys, that's what they do. They don't take action. They don't run after things. But a protector, that's what he does instead of a predator. Men are protector. Boys are predators. They take.
Well, Brian, this has been a great conversation. Where can people go to learn more about the book and your work?
You can go to briantome.com, and The Five Marks of a Man is available in bookstores everywhere.
All right. Brian Tome, thanks for your time. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure, Brett. It's been a bucket list item to be with you, and honored to do so.
My guest here is Brian Tome. He's the author of the book, The Five Marks of a Man. It's available on amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. You can find more information about his work at his website, briantome.com. Also, check out our show notes at aom.is/marks, where you find links to resources and we delve deeper into this topic.
Thanks for joining us on this journey toward aggressive living. Find more resources, articles, past episodes, and more at briantome.com. My new book, a 60-day devotional called The Five Marks of a Man, 60 Days to a Powerful Life, along with all the other books in the Five Marks library, are open right now on Amazon. Be sure to leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Then send an email to dirt@briantome.com to get a free Aggressive Life sticker. Find more on Instagram at Brian Tome. The Aggressive Life is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio.